3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Interceptor Beyond podcast. My name is Arthur, and today our guest is Jan.
Hey, my name is Jan. I sing and I play guitar in the psychedelic rock band Trip.
I just want to mention to our listeners that if you like what you're hearing, don't forget to follow and rate this podcast on Spotify.
Excellent. I discovered Trip's music on Bandcamp back in 2019, I think it was the album Electric Magic.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I wrote to you an email asking something like if you want like a video or something. And I think you responded something like, for now, we're fine or something like this. I don't remember exactly. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And then 1 year later, unexpected for me, you sent me an email and said like, okay, yeah, sure. we want one.
Yeah. I remember the video you made. It was one other animated video. And you sended me like this video as an example of what you do. And Tommy and Jean-Lou, so the other two guys in the band, and me, we just talk a lot. And as soon as there's mails coming, we just discuss about everything. And Tommy, Jean-Lou, and I were all super thrilled. And fortunately, you know, the album was out already. And it's always an investment. And so we had to discuss it. But yeah, then we had the other album going and Multicolor Desert in the writing. And then we figured out, you know, let's write Arthur and ask if he's good, if he wants to be part of the project. And that's it, yeah.
So it was just like you just remembered about me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did you consider other people?
So it was kind of a tricky situation, or a key situation, because it was the first visual we ever put on our music. So, of course, we thought about lots of possibilities. And in the end, we just feel really, connected to what you did, to this whole kind of patchwork animation. And then we said, you're the only person we write to, really, because when we decided that we wanted to make it with you, then it was... Sure. Then we wrote you, and we're waiting for an answer from you, and here we are now.
Yeah, and actually, I checked all your Facebook, you know, from the history from the very beginning, and I noticed that somewhere around March in 2020, there was like you had a small promo video of stop animation when you, like, three of you in a rocket going up.
Yeah.
Who did that?
Tommy did it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, he did it because we had this whole this idea of this animation we really appreciated. And back in the days, Jean-Lou and Tommy were living together. And then they just tried to make this video. And after this 20-second video, we just all noticed how much work it is. So I cannot imagine how it is to make like a professional animated video for 3.5 minutes.
Yeah, we should say that it's like a classic stop motion animation with the cutout figures. It looks amazing.
Cool, thank you.
And that's why I thought maybe you thought about me, but I think that video was after, maybe, or something like this. I'm not sure.
This I don't remember, but I know that we always felt attracted by this kind of animation, because it's somehow it's still an old school way to do, you know.
Yeah,
it's an old school way. It's like Disney started. It's like animation really started, and it has a really 70s vibe to it.
Yeah, my inspiration for that, for in general, like, I mean, I do it on computer, of course, but my inspiration is Monty Python and 70s kind of stop animation.
Yeah,
that's where the humor comes from and all that stuff.
Good,
but we'll discuss the album a little bit later. Let's go back to the beginning. Where did it all start? And I want you to first mention where the band is located, because I think it's interesting. Because if you check your Facebook, for example, you'll see three languages, you know, like how you post things.
Yeah.
And for people, it's unusual. Not unusual, but quite interesting.
So the whole band started with Tommy and I. So the drummer and I. And Tommy lived in France, and I was living in France at the time as well, but I'm German. And the whole band started just for one gig. And in France, there's this like music festival every year on the 21st of June. And it was originally just this one gig. And finally, we played the gig, and we liked to play together. And it was kind of a blues duo, black in the style of the Black Keys a bit in the beginning. Then we planned a tour for 2 weeks in Europe, and we had our first album out with already some organs and some bass lines to it, just little overdubs to make it more interesting. And a good friend of us, Jean-Lou, proposed then to come with us and to play this little organ parts and bass parts, really punctual in the set. And we played two or three gigs in the tour, and then it was clear that there is no coming back from it. And then Jean-Lou added Leslie and played more and started singing. And from there on, the music turned into a psychedelic, heavy psychedelic soul music. And there was no turning back anymore.
What's interesting, I mean, you just mentioned that, okay, we just checked it out. We toured a little bit. We played. But actually, there's more to this, to almost every line that you said, right? For example, your first album is not just like an EP. It's around... I mean, Don't Worry Mama, as I understand, it's your first album.
Yeah, exactly.
10, 15 songs there, something like this. Or, I mean, a lot, I would say.
A lot, yeah.
Like a proper album. And it's like really bluesy, and there's just the two of you. Yeah, really black keys. That's what I thought. Inspired.
Yeah.
And how did you record this?
I moved from France, moved to Germany, and I learned event technician, basically. And I had one teacher of mine who was my acoustic teacher, and we really get along. We started to get like big friends with time. And at some point he said, you know, he's recording and he heard the music we do with Tommy. And so he was asking if he can record us. And we finally, yeah, we said, okay, let's go. And we went to his studio, which is like an old train station he bought.
What?
This guy won Monopoly. He got a train station in the Parkstraße.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So we went there, and it's full of old equipment. And he just really said he believes in what we do, and he wants to record us. He don't want any money for it, and he really wants to make vinyl.
Ooh, I would say it's something sketchy, you know. I would just expect something weird, you know, when somebody says, I don't want anything, I want to support you. I mean, I know, I mean, it happens, like you as an example, but now what I know about the music industry is just like, ooh, something weird. Maybe he wants to write. Maybe he's...
Yeah, I think that weird turned kind of lucky, because back in the days, I was maybe 19 or so. Yeah, he really, Christian is his name. He's a really, really good friend, and he's been supporting us ever since as much as he could. Yeah, there was absolutely no hook at the story. We just went there, record the album. He did the mixing. He called friends to do the mastering. But it's all professional people, you know, working like it's their job. And it was just out of pure friendship and out of, I don't know, just a big heart. And the album came out just like he said. And now the vinyl is out, and we, since today, have not to pay a single euro for it. Yeah.
Wow, that's a dream come true for some people, you know, like.
Yeah, I still when I think about it, I think it's crazy, but it's the way it turned out. And this was like the first foot in the door, we say, you know, the first impression, and then we said, okay, everything is possible. Then you don't need to have 6,000 euros and. Don't need to do everything by yourself. Technically, if this is working out right now, then everything else is possible as well, you know?
Yeah, I was impressed with the sound of the album. It sounded really good, you know, because usually you expect the sound of the first album to be you're searching for the sound.
Yeah.
But this was like recorded in good quality. And then you said you went on a tour. You played on a boat, I wrote down.
Yeah. So. The boat was the first gig, really, with Christian. What happens is, as I was technically a student, and it was the year of all the exams, Christian was always asking, like, if we want to play with some bands around in Germany or with his bands, if we could play shows together. But he said, let's do it after the exams, because, you know, maybe it's not people don't like it too much if. We are hanging out on the weekends playing music and I'm standing in the jury then. So technically he said, let's wait for after the exams. And this gig at the boat was one day after I graduated and got my diploma as an event technician.
Oh, wow. And maybe tell the listeners what we're talking about. What kind of a gig was it?
It was, what was it again?
It was, let me remind you, it was a Theaterschiff.
Yeah, Theaterschiff. I don't remember why.
It was the release party of Torpedo Molecules.
Oh, that's it. Okay. So Torpedo Molecules is the band of Christian.
Ah, okay.
And Christian liked the music we make and was asking us if we could play, if we want to play on this evening. So we just rented the whole boat, invited his old friends, recorded the whole thing. And after the recording, he listened to the concert we did with Trip. And then he said, you know what? Maybe we should record an album or so in this same energy, like a live album. That was the whole story. Yeah. Now I remember.
So you had, and it's not Don't Worry Mama. It's just a live session. It's a separate thing, right?
It never came out. We wanted to bring this live session out. But in the end, Christian was listening to this live session and just said, maybe we should go in the studio and make something bigger than just a live situation. Maybe we should go in the studio, record, put some overdubs on it, and make something bigger out of it, you know?
Ah, all right.
Now I remember, yeah.
And you said now you have the vinyl. So you mean you released the vinyl recently or something like this?
The vinyl came out a year after recording. It came out 2019 or something.
And also Christian did that, or?
Yeah, exactly. With his company called Funky Monks on Records.
Ah, okay. So they printed the whole thing. They ordered. They did all the shipping. Did the band participate in the business side somehow?
Absolutely not. No. So
holy shit, that's so good.
I mean, we made the artwork. I mean, we decided everything technically as well. We decided to invented something that's called Analog to Share.
Please tell us more about this thing.
So Analog to Share, the main idea was that nowadays you can share music with a single click to everyone in seconds. And back in the days when you had vinyl and you wanted someone to listen to it, it was a whole, you know, it wasn't that easy. You had to go there, you had to give the vinyl. You'd never know, is he going to give me the vinyl back? And we found out that sometimes if you print out one vinyl, it would cost you only a few euros more to print another vinyl, like a double vinyl or so. And so what we did is we took the artwork. On one side, there is the vinyl. And on the other side, there is the same vinyl with the same songs. And there is a little different artwork. And it says like it's for gifting to people. It allows people to buy a double vinyl for an affordable price, and they can give away one vinyl to someone as if they would share it online. It's the same idea. They just share the music, they share analog music, and they wouldn't miss this vinyl since they have the same vinyl still, you know?
Wow, that's a cool idea. And how many vinyls were there? I mean, of course, double, but 300, 500 plus double, I guess. So it's like 600 or 1,000, something like this.
I guess it was that we did 300 in Analog to Share and 200, like not to share, just a single vinyl. And the Analog to Share in the end costs only 5 euros more because that's what the prints cost us, you know. So we don't lose any money, but people can just share music.
And how was it? How was the response? How was everything? You know, it's like it's the first time I hear something like this.
The response was good because people dug it really. And in the end, if we look at the stocks, there is definitely more of the Analog to Share that is going because it's a gimmick and because it gives the opportunity to share. Lots of people said, you know, then I'm buying the Analog to Share and I'm giving the second one to, who knows, my best friend, my dad, because blah, blah. And people really use it the way we wanted it to. So we're super happy with it, yeah.
I guess local press covered this thing, I would say. This is quite interesting stuff.
Yeah, we were trying to put a patent on it or so, but in the end, it's ridiculous money, and it's not like we had the idea to share music, so whatever. If other bands want to do it, then it's just good, you know. It's
Putting a patent on something like this would be hard, but I guess you just need to be the pioneers of this idea, like of this philosophy. You need to maybe just put more emphasis on it.
Yeah.
But it's definitely pretty cool. Are you planning to do it again?
Yeah, probably. I mean, what we do when we make albums with Trip is the packaging itself is always really appealing and interesting to us. So it's all about gimmicks. Every album we put out has something special to it. We would just hate to just bring a CD out with the cover and say, now you can buy it. Don't like it. So every album we do has a special gimmick to it. And this Analog to Share thing was, for now, the gimmick of the first album. But at some point, definitely, yeah. I mean, why not?
Why do you have such love for gimmicks?
I don't know if it's... I don't really know. I think it's... I don't like the idea that an object can be boring or that you can have enough of an object. For me, the best thing is when you take a record out from the 70s, which is around 50 years, and you discover little things that you haven't seen till then. So you can have an object for like 20 years in your living room, and still when you take it in your hand, you discover stuff, and it's not costing anything else than mind energy. I just love it. It's just a passion. I don't know. I just like to keep people searching. I like the idea that an object is not losing any value, but it's just taking value every time, you know.
That's what I also like about vinyls, and I like details. By the way, what do you own, like a vinyl with such gimmicks, you know, that you're proud of or something like this as a good example?
I got an album from Jan and Dean, you know, the surf rock pop duo.
Yes. Yes.
Jan and Dean, yeah. And when you open the album, there's a whole book about this duo, which is really as iconic as the Beach Boys. I mean, it's the same time, and the music is incredible. Some stuff from Jan and Dean is as intense as the Beatles, and just less known. But in the end, when you read this book, you open the vinyl, there's a few pages you can read all about the history of the band. And at some point, there's a sheet, and then you see which song has been recorded where, with what instruments, who wrote the song, what car were they driving while recording the song, and what the name of the girlfriends were they had, and over time, how much albums they sold. And it's just so much information and ridiculous information. And you see the car, sometimes they have the same girlfriend, sometimes they drive the same car. It's just super funny, yeah. You can spend...
This is so cool.
...hours, you know, on it, just discovering the band on another level, you know?
This is so cool. And I just before you said girlfriends and cars, I thought, oh, what? They just wrote what they were eating in the breakfast or something like this. But when you said the cars and the girls, I was like, ah, there's more. There's idea behind it. Of course you're interested in that stuff, you know? They thought about it.
It's really surf rock. I mean, it's if they fit the style, and it's just, yeah.
If surf music for you is a big influence, because it feels that I kind of there's like an influence in the trip music a little bit.
Years ago, we started for fun again with Jean-Louis, Tommy, and a few other friends, a surf rock project where we just cover surf rock, and we just play during the summer, and we wear flower shirts, and we just sing Beach Boys and everything that is. Surfer. For the beginning, it was just fun because people dig it. It's rock and roll, and it's always just good fun. But after time, you realize, shit, those harmonies are so wild, and the rhythm is so incredible. The guitar riffs, the sound to it. It's not just fun. It's mind-blowing, like really. And so with time and with all the gigs we did with the Surfing Coconuts, we called, I think that this whole harmonies and this whole rock and roll rough 70s style and took over to our music, yeah, somehow.
I really like surf rock, but I'm not so into the surf. I don't know so many bands. I mean, I know the Beach Boys and maybe others. I don't want to embarrass myself.
Right. The problem with this whole, with the surf rock and rock and roll in the 60s is that there are so many bands. None of them, I mean, not all of them are selling billions of records, but it's just there's billions of bands, really. They all sound quite the same. They all have stuff to them. But if you don't, I just know the main bands. And when I start digging into surf rock, there's so much under styles of this music. There's no way. That's fully okay and comprehensible not to know the bands.
Let's go back to the past. Don't Worry Mama was released in 2018, and then it was a duo. It was just two of you.
Yeah.
And then you went on a tour, and Jean-Luc joined you.
Yeah, Jean-Luc, yeah.
Yeah. And then you released Electric Magic.
We did.
And so what was the difference between this album and the previous album? Obviously, the lineup changed.
Yeah. The lineup change was one thing. The main thing was that we didn't go back to where we recorded the first album, but we decided to lock ourselves up for 2 weeks in a little wood house somewhere in the forest, because we know the people we had to call to chill there 2 weeks. And then we got into the studio with mostly ideas of songs, barely like general ideas. And in 2 weeks of time, we wrote the whole album as one big chunk, as 40 minutes music, and recorded it. And after that, Tommy took his bus, he was living in his bus at the time, and made a 4 months travel to Morocco and mixed the album in his bus. That's the whole idea.
Holy shit. That's probably a separate story of how he was mixing the whole album in the bus.
Yeah, that's enough story for 3 books this trip, yeah.
Did you somehow incorporate that story into the album somehow, like merch or something like this?
We knew that Tommy was going to take a little break and go to Morocco while we were recording the album. But besides using a few like Arabic instruments and plans in the music itself, we didn't push it further. I mean, it was just Tommy's little vacation, but in the end he was working all day. Yeah, we didn't necessarily do too much out of it, no.
Electric Magic, it sounds closer to your latest album. You said there was like some general idea. What kind of limitations you want to have, or did you have like a strict concept or something like this, or it just was vague?
For Electric Magic, you mean now?
Yeah.
The main idea for Electric Magic was just that we wanted to have this one piece of music you can listen, like that makes sense to listen to. This 40 minutes where you just sit down and the songs work with one another. And that was the main idea, except for this idea of a concept album, there was no limits, absolutely zero limits. We used a ridiculous amount of instruments and did overdubs, and it was really limitless. Except that we said we are 2 weeks in the studio and it has to be a concept album. That was the two main rules, and the rest was absolutely open bar.
But did you come up with the new songs in these 2 weeks, or you just recorded everything?
We had a few song ideas in the beginning. But mostly we wrote the songs there and we recorded the songs there. We really decided to let it all happen in these 2 weeks, shut off from the rest of the world, don't technically need any contact to anybody. We had like this two vans back in the days. Tommy and Jean-Lou were living in those vans, so they had a little kitchen. We just bought a ridiculous amount of vegetables and rice and stayed there for 2 weeks. And then we knew on this date, we have to stop making overdubs. We have to stop changing things. Then it is what it is. That's it, yeah.
It sounds amazing. That's the album that I discovered you on Bandcamp. I really like that album.
Cool, thank you, man.
And I read that you actually did some crowdfunding.
Yeah, we did.
For this album. Why did you decide to do that?
Because for the last album, we had Christian on our back. And he was saying straight, don't care about the money, I got you. And for the second album, there was no one as Christian. But it was our decision, and we had a good amount of friends supporting us and people coming to the shows, and it just felt like a good moment to do so. And we were asking for €1,000 just to cover most of the costs, and we ended up 1,700 or so. Yeah, it just felt right in the moment, and it definitely felt right at the end because we had such a massive support.
And you chose a platform, it was called Ulule or something like this.
Ulule, yeah.
Why that one?
Oh, I don't know. It's a... It's like French people do, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, right.
I guess it's the most known in France.
Did you know about the transaction fees and that they take some percentage from the final thing?
I don't think we knew at the time. And to be honest, it was mostly Tommy that took care of it. And we didn't think too much. Maybe funny because it was a second album, but it was our first experience. And so we just did. And I don't remember that the fee they took was too ridiculous or so.
Yeah, but I'm just asking because how much you thought about the crowdfunding thing?
We really liked it because there was this whole part of people can like buy stuff in advance. That was really encouraging because when someone like donated 10 euros, it meant that you sold an album already. Seeing that like 100 people were supporting already is just giving so much energy in a way, because you know how the music is selling, and it's not just like someone is giving you just random money and then they need to buy the album. It's just they buy it in advance, they buy shirts in advance, and it's just a big support. Yeah.
So what were your expectations?
For myself, I had pretty low expectations. I was thinking, well, 1,000 euros, because I mean, it was somehow crazy amount of money, and I mean, you can do a lot of things with 1,000 euros. I mean, that's what we thought back in the days, and I had really low expectations. And we, Jean-Loup, was like, 1,000 euros is easy. We can make it. I mean, he had bands before and he did crowdfunding before, so he knew. I had zero expectations, and I was blown away when I saw that it was 1,700 euros or so. It was almost double as much. It was absolutely crazy.
Would you do it again?
Funny that you ask, because we are thinking of doing it again, because the last one was a while ago now, and we have not this album that we're recording now, but the next one is probably, yeah, probably something like this is going to happen again, yeah.
With the same amount or more?
Electric Magic came out only on CDs.
Mm-hmm.
That explains why you need that less money to bring your album out. But we are really into vinyls, the three of us. And problem is vinyls costs way more. So we'll have to see. Probably it's going to be more, yeah.
I keep asking and bothering everybody about their cassette tapes. You know, what do you think about tapes?
Oh, we have some already.
You have some already. How many did you make?
It's only 50. Because we are working with a little cassette, I don't know how you say that in English.
Manufacturer.
Yeah, and they just play over your cassettes, they do the designs, and it's a little organization in our city called Kleiner Salon 22, and they just did it. It's more, again, for the gimmick of it, because lots of our friends still have shitty cars with only cassette players, so, yeah.
That's what they hear from other people. They listen to, if they buy such cassettes, they listen to them in the car.
Yeah.
For example, in the United States, it's mostly in cars.
Yeah, I imagine.
In other countries, it's tape collectors. Such people exist. There are not so many. And super fans of bands, if they have.
Yeah.
So, if you're planning to do this crowdfunding, what would you do differently?
I cannot really answer this. Mostly we think as a trio of us, and it's when we sit together and we have a few beers and we discuss about it that the main ideas come. From now, I don't know what I would do differently, really. I really liked how it happens back in the days.
Yeah, you have a feel that everything that you do has a super light. You just ease into it in a good way, I mean, is that it comes naturally. And that's why it has this natural flow of how the music comes out and how your stuff comes out, you know, the merchandise and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I noticed that you have really cool merch in general, like t-shirts.
Oh, thank you.
You also made a comic book for the latest album, What Happens When Nothing Happens.
Yeah.
And what was the decision behind that? Also a gimmick?
Also a gimmick, yeah. This has become a big part of us releasing albums. It's just thinking of gimmicks, really, something that makes it special. And for this, it was the artwork is really like dark artwork, red and black, by a good painter friend of us. So the gimmick was that the vinyl comes out in the same colors, like splatter black and red vinyl. And that to the album, comes a comic that we designed and draw together, and where all the text, all the lyrics are basically people talking in the comic book. So if you sit back, put your vinyl on and listen to it, you can just open your comic book and really read it. And everything you will read is stuff that we sing. So stuff that you hear as well, yeah.
How many pages are there?
It's an average 2 or 3 pages a song, maybe 10 to 15 pages. And every song designed by another artist. So it's really, there's lots of different styles to the comic, yeah. I'm sending you one.
Yeah, thanks. People can still buy this comic book on your band.
They can, yeah. And as well, you know, on shows. But you don't have to. I mean, if you just dig the vinyl and you want to listen to the vinyl, it's all right. The comic itself costs a bit more because printing costs.
How many copies did you make?
Oh, that I don't remember. 500? 500, yeah, probably 500, yeah.
When we talked about the music video and I asked you, should I put something from your music? You said, like, put these numbers and stuff. Do you have something like this in the comic book also, that they're like secrets, Easter eggs tied into the music and stuff.
Yeah, so the thank you for reminding me, I forgot the bit. Yeah, the last song of the album is called The Garden Part 2. If you have the comic book, you will have the numbers and you'll have a code to decode the message, but you only get this code in the comic book, really. But if you have it, then you can discover like secrets, yeah, again, gimmicks within the gimmicks.
Yeah, you should like maybe like tell more people, I mean in general, not now, but in general, spread out that there are gimmicks around like the stories and secrets, because when I read in your Facebook, it's not so clear that you have, but this is really cool stuff. This is what actually people would like to have.
That's the idea about secrets. I really like the idea that someone, after he listened, you know, already since a year or so is listening to the album, he just decides, you know what, let's make it again. Just sitting on his couch listening to the album, and then he finds the numbers, and then he finds the and then he's like, what? And this for me is the most rewarding. I don't want to, every time I give the comic to someone, I don't want to tell him what he needs to do. Some people don't see it. Some people see it and they are rewarded, you know, in the end. And I think this is magic. Even if the comic is sitting in your living room for 2 years and you just discover it afterwards because you listen to this podcast, that's what I really love. It's the little things that keeps on popping and keeps on making an album interesting and modern and up to date, because things happen, you know.
Well, I really like such stuff. I really like the master of such stuff is Jack White. He's doing lots of stuff. He like, remember he put vinyls in the couches or something like this, because he was doing upholstery when he was working early days, and only like years later people discovered the vinyls inside of their furniture or something like this. It's something amazing.
Crazy, right?
The way he does with vinyls, that there has double grooves, triple grooves, whatever, like some etching and stuff. That's amazing. We now talking about the latest album, and that's where I also participated in making the music video.
Yes, you did.
What I call a concept album.
Yeah.
Can you tell people about it a little bit, about the concept?
What Happens When Nothing Happens is an album we wrote around a whole story. And the story is about technically like the end of the world, if you will. It's the story of a family of a few generations are overtaking in the album, and it reflects lots of things that are going wrong nowadays, and all packed up in a wonderful psychedelic magic packet.
Awesome. You know how to like, how to sell it. Yeah. The album is great.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
And I think when you sent me the song, you sent me the whole album, so I could understand the backstory and everything. And I tried to incorporate, I think, the elements of the story inside of the video also.
Yeah.
When I checked Facebook, I noticed that you won Battle of the Bands.
That's true, yeah.
And you actually had several Battle of the Bands.
So what we had was this main Battle of the Bands in Saarbrücken, the city where I lived. We won this with a price of 2,500 euros, which paid off the whole album. I mean, a big part of the album costs. And since we won this particular Battle of the Bands, we had like a ticket to participate in a German-wide Battle of the Bands. We did participate on this. We took our van. We drove to Magdeburg, which is shitloads of hours away from here. And we played there. And we won the prize of the best songwriting in the competition. That was last year.
So you mean it's the Local Heroes competition?
Exactly. You could only participate to the Local Heroes competition if you won the Battle of the Bands in your region.
And what did you win? I think you won something.
We won a recording session in the north of Germany, as well as a publishing deal with a company called Jet Records. We won a couple hundred euros worth of Thomann gear and microphones and really lots of things. Like a massive package came in, and we're still not halfway through using everything we won, because like, you know, this publishing deal again costs nothing, and when a single comes out or so, we can just use it and probably for the next album. Yeah.
You know what I also noticed on your Facebook is that you recorded, you made videos of how you made the album. Like there are three videos.
Yeah.
And they're like, there's a lot of editing there. It's like, it takes a lot of work to do, to make those videos. Are you planning to do something like this for the future project?
Yeah. The videos, we did them with Tommy. And Tommy is, I don't know, really interested in animation and, you know, green screens. And I have lots of shitty ideas, like putting extra explosions everywhere and memes. And so we really discovered the whole video making together. It's just so much fun because you can really make something like you want it. It's really straightforward. It's really rough. It's like dumb in a way. But we did it as you would like put a video together of your holidays or so. It's just memories for yourself. And if people like it, then, you know, then it's just bonus. So we did it for a couple tours as well. And we are definitely going to do it again as soon as we have lots of footage and interesting footage. Yeah.
You're like a fun, in a good way, band, you know, like it's cool to look at you.
Yeah, we're having fun.
So yeah. You should probably try out some TikTok stuff. I keep saying TikTok to all the musicians because it's still... While it's still fresh.
My sister is using it a lot, and she's constantly reminding me to do so. I just don't know why I have this natural barrier, and I don't know how to get to it. You know, it's not a lack of time because I have plenty, but I just don't find the access to it in a way. I don't know.
Most of the people I talk to, they have a barrier to TikTok. I don't have a barrier, but I can't make videos like that, like you. Yeah, talking about the videos, actually, you went to Hopla Awards for the music video.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
How was the trip? And it was for the one that I made, right?
Exactly, yeah.
How was it?
Hopla Awards is in the region in France where Tommy and Jean-Loup lives. It's an award for upcoming musician, and they're not only rewarding videos, they do a lot, you know, for artists, and they put a spotlight on artists, upcoming artists, and so on. And it's in Strasbourg, so we know Strasbourg really well, have lots of friends there, and we went there. It was Corona time, so I assume that it feels better when you're not sitting there with your mask, and the place is really packed. There was lots of restrictions, but it was a really cool evening. You know, we're just sitting there discovering lots of artists, lots of friends that were there as well. Yeah, seeing other videos, other approaches of artists, was just a good evening.
Yeah, I watched the online session because it was happening live stream. So I participated live.
Oh, yeah, true.
I was like, yeah. All right, who's going to give it? Who's going to win? Because for me, it was like oh, who's going to win? Is it our video or not?
Yeah.
But there were some videos that won.
Happens. Yeah, it's always funny, those evenings. A French comedian said that once. And in such evenings, the place is packed with potential winners. And as the evening goes, the place is filling up with losers, you know, technically. And the guy standing on the stage, he is doing a hell of a job because as the evening goes, he's talking to people that don't really want to sit there anymore. But the guy did a great job and we had a great evening anyways. And, you know, everybody is putting work and money and energy in his work. And it's like it is. And if you cannot please everybody, it's like it is. Videos still kick ass. I watched it again this week by myself because I'm just proud of the result.
How was the response to the video?
It was fantastic, really. You know, I said before that it was the first image we put on our music. And this is how people visualize the music now. And the video you did was in a way as like... fucked up as the music was, it just really fits, and people really dig it. We like it as well, and the response was fantastic. Yeah.
Oh, that's great to hear, because usually I don't get to hear the response of the people. I just read the comments or something like this, or you tell me like everything's done and that's it, and then I move on and I don't really know how it's going.
Which is funny because I mean technically the end product is half yours, half ours, you know.
I want to ask you about what you're planning to do this year. What are the plans for the band?
This year we are going to record, with this year I mean next month, probably we are going to record the fourth album. Normally we do an album a year, but for obvious reasons it was different last year. So this year we are going to record a new album, which is technically an acoustic album.
Unexpected,
yeah. I said technically because, like, the backbone of it is acoustic. There's arrangements to it. It's going to be recorded live, but I mean, sometimes there's a Dobro that it's plugged in. There is some keys, Fender Rhodes and stuff. So technically it's an acoustic album, but it's just a reflection of the two last years we had. I mean,
so is it going to be also a concept album?
In a way, yeah. There is a gimmick, you know. I mean, you know us now. There's going to be some gimmicks. Not necessarily a concept album like the last one. This time, the concept is more about time, about how the music was before Corona, during, and what's going to come after. It's a time-based, vision-based album so far. Like, we do some reinterpretations of old songs, just a few. We have fully new songs written for this acoustic purpose. And there's even some covers, which normally is not what we do. But now, being together for 2 years, keep on playing music acoustically together when we sit in the evening and we drink and we eat is a big part of it. So this is going to reflect in the album in a way, kind of as a big checkpoint somehow, you know.
I've seen that you have a lot of recordings, live recordings, like video recordings on radio stations and TV channels. So you have like a lot of experience of playing to the camera.
Yeah.
Are you planning to do something with that? Because now you're like more experienced than other musicians, I would say.
The Corona time was indeed a special experience for us, you know, because it was as well our first time playing in front of cameras. But the live gig you see in Magdeburg is the last gig on camera to date we did. And it felt better, it felt less intimidating in a way. Yeah, I think we are comfortable now with the cameras and it's good. We will probably record some videos of it because the album is going to be live played. We do not plan on putting it all like a live out or so. This is for now not the idea. But footage from the studio with worked on audio is probably going to happen.
But you haven't done any live streaming by yourself?
We have done one with Quasi Live. This is one live recording we did. But Jean-Louis Tomé and I are strong believers of live music, simply. Like, the album situation, recording and live streaming is good fun, but the real shit is playing. We just simply do not feel the same doing a live stream than being in a room. Even if there's 500 people on the live stream and 10 people in the room, probably would prefer playing with 10 people in a room because the energy is different. And this is how this is the concept. It's playing live and loud and having fun. Live streaming, it's just simply not working right. Yeah. So it's a bad time to think so, but it's honest. So probably we're going to avoid making live streams. Yeah.
All right. Do you have a backup plan? We don't know what's going to happen in this year regarding the live gigs.
Yeah.
But it's possible that there will be not so many. Do you have some ideas about that? What you're going
to
do?
So what happens is that this album is going to be recorded and is going to go out anyways. The whole idea of this acoustic-based album is that it is more easy to do gigs this way, you know? It's more easy because it's not necessarily the same volume or so. We are kind of making the best of the situation. And punctually, there will be, as soon as it's possible, electric gigs with full power and the loud drums and organs and guitars. But for the most time, if this is the only thing we can do, it's going to be acoustic.
When are you planning to release it?
Start of the summer, probably. Because I don't know how it is in Austria. You're in Austria right now, yeah?
Yeah.
I don't know how it is in Austria, but here, last year, in summer, the gigs are going. You play outside. People have space. Nobody is having a panic attack because of the virus. So outside, everything is possible. So we plan on having it in the summer, playing as much as we can, and probably next year when November comes and people have to gather inside again, then the numbers are going to be high again and then the gigs get cancelled, yeah.
Have you thought about how you're going to promote it?
We have this deal, like this promotion deal that we won, you know, with Jet Records. So this is going to be a big part of it.
What did they offer you actually for this deal? Approximately, like distribution some kind or like...
Yeah, distribution, online promotion and distribution.
So probably you're going to be mentioned in some press plus merch, maybe distribution kind of. And
yeah, exactly. Which is good because we don't have to do it. At some point, you know, you have to spread the work, focus on yours. And if you have the opportunity to work with someone like this, like Jet Records or so, we're really happy to do so.
And I want to wish you all the best with the recording of the album.
Yeah,
and having as many gigs as possible.
Oh, yeah.
Where can people follow Trip and hear the music?
You can follow Trip on Instagram and on Facebook at Rock Band Trip, and you can listen to Trip on Spotify. I would recommend you look for like Trip, What Happens When Nothing Happens, because somehow there's lots of people called Trip in the world. And Bandcamp, Apple Music, if you want to find it, you will find it, and then you'll have a good time.
And I think you have merch also on Bandcamp.
Exactly. The merch, we do all the merch ourselves. We have a little screen printing atelier. We print everything by ourselves. We can do hoodies and we do the designs ourselves, and every color is possible. Just hit us on and ask and everything is possible.
Excellent. Which song are we going to hear at the end of the episode?
We have to listen to Multicolor Desert because it's obvious.
All right, Jan. Thank you very much, man. Thank you very much. I wish you all the best.
Thank you, Arthur. Thank you for inviting.
Will, I always did. All my friends already dead. I'm living in the desert, multicolor desert. Scream!
That was a cool song. Thanks, Trip. And thank you for listening to Interceptor Beyond podcast. Don't forget to follow the show on Spotify. And if you like what you're hearing, don't be square, rate the show on Spotify. It helps a lot.